Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Excuse me. While my presentation is loading, I just wanted to say that this project is funded by Clearway Minnesota, and I have nothing else to disclose. I do want to acknowledge my co-authors, Jaime Martinez from Clearway Minnesota, and Dr. Lourdes Paez-Conde Garbinati from University of Southern California, who's with us today. I also want to acknowledge the other folks that have been involved in this project. There was the combination of staff, the research department at Clearway Minnesota, and also, of course, the fellows and coaches from this program. Today I want to share a little bit about a cross-cultural leadership program called LAMP, which is Leadership and Advocacy Institute to Advance Minnesota's Parity for Priority Populations. It's a project that began about 2.5 years ago, and it was a project that really built upon the work that was being done in the state of Minnesota for priority populations and tobacco control. The place that we really wanted to start was really looking at the significance that tobacco had for priority populations, and priority populations were defined as the American Indian community, the African American, the African immigrant, the Asian American, the Hispanic Latino community, and the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender communities. So when we look at the history of tobacco, it's a different picture than you might hear when you hear about the mainstream tobacco control movement. And these are some of the elements of that, from the sacred use of tobacco to the growing of tobacco by some of the communities to the targeting of our communities by the tobacco industry. So why community leadership? There's been a lot of research done around tobacco disparities among priority populations. There's also been research done looking at the need for capacity building efforts among priority populations, and particularly around leadership development. There's also recognition that within the history of the tobacco control movement, there's been a historical lack of inclusion of many of our communities in those efforts. And to add on to that, the limited leadership development opportunities for many in our community. The LAMP project, its goals were fourfold. One, to develop strategic community action plans for each of those five priority population groups, to be able to increase tobacco control knowledge and skills of 25 to 35 fellows, to provide coaches to help support the fellows while they were in the LAMP Leadership Institute, and to motivate the trained fellows to actually implement parts or all of the community action plans. This is a logic model showing the connection between the inputs, the outputs, and the outcomes. And so you can see the four different goals that are incorporated into this and the short-term and long-term outcomes that we were hoping to have at the end of the project. The team that was involved in this project, of course, included the 25 to 35 LAMP fellows. There actually were 36 that started at the beginning of this project, but it involved a lot of other individuals as well. There was staff, there were the coaches, there was an advisory committee, there was a strategic planning group, there was an evaluation team. And what I want to share with you today is the evaluation, some of the evaluation results. The LAMP leadership model was built on the APEAL leadership model, which we had been doing work primarily in the Asian American and Pacific Islander community for about 10 years. We adapted it for Minnesota's priority population, but kept the critical elements of the philosophy and values that were so important in the work that we do. One is recognizing that leadership is something that we're building upon, so it's not a deficit model, but really building upon the community assets. Respecting the diversity of the participants, and we had a very, very diverse group, both ethnically, geographically, and also in terms of language. But respecting the diversity also in terms of learning styles. So it wasn't just kind of a conference format. We combined it with a variety of different activity-based, experiential-based activities. And being able to address issues of what we call parity and justice for all the communities. So even though tobacco was the core of what we were hoping to accomplish, we were able to talk about a lot of the root causes of disparities in general and allow for discussions to take place among all the participants. The integration of cross-cultural relationship building and building was critical, and I'll share some results from that. And really being able to apply whatever activities that they were involved in to actual learnings out into the communities was also important. It wasn't enough just to do a training, but to be able to apply that. In our program, we had five core competencies: tobacco control, collaboration, advocacy, facilitation, and cultural or community competencies. We had some secondary competencies as well, including media advocacy, fund development, and a few others, but these were the primary ones that we focused on. And the components for this institute involved the trainings, of course, but again, similar to the difference, diversity in terms of the team members, we had a diversity of activities that led up to the trainings. So we didn't start off by doing the leadership trainings. We first compiled an advisory committee meeting. We had community members involved in developing a strategic action plan that the fellows could then mobilize around. And we also convened a tobacco disparities conference in Minnesota. And this is just an example of some of the types of activities that were included in the Leadership Institute. Not just, again, didactic, but activity-based. There was storytelling. There was also opportunities to express the diversity of each of the communities. When doing the evaluation, there were some things that we recognized. One was that although there was some literature around community leadership programs in general, there was very, very little in terms of publishing of the evaluation of those programs. We found an actual handbook of leadership development that was published after we had already done most of the evaluation, so it really didn't help us in designing this. But I think it really demonstrated that this is a growing field that's being incorporated into public health. For our evaluation, we incorporated multiple process and outcome evaluation questions. The data that we collected were primarily from surveys that were collected at three data collection points: baseline, at the first core training, and after the last capstone training, and then after each event that was held. In addition, there were telephone interviews that were completed among 25 fellows after the end of the program. I do want to say that this was an 18-month leadership program that involved about 17 days of training, so it was a fairly extensive leadership training over a year and a half. The evaluation really looked at four different levels. One was the individual level, looking again at knowledge and skills, also looking at the community level. What would be the impact in terms of being able to mobilize communities against or around tobacco issues. But also important was looking at the policy and systemic level. And I don't just mean clean indoor air excise tax, which normally is looked at in tobacco control policy, but also inclusion of priority populations in mainstream tobacco control activities and committees. And finally, looking at the cross-cultural level, the significance of cross-cultural collaboration. So here are some of the findings on each of those levels. 32 out of 36 fellows successfully completed the LAMP Institute, and again, recognizing that it was an 18-month program, we felt that that was a very positive thing. That there were self-reported skill levels that increased on many different areas, and there were also similar increases in knowledge areas. And this is an example of the skill areas, where we looked at seven different topical areas, and the measurements was done at baseline and after the institute. So you can see that, for example, under fundraising, which is the third bar down, that the fellows rated their skills as being positive in 36%, but then by the end of the institute, 84% felt that their skills were strong by that time. Okay, so significant changes among many of those topical areas. This is a quote from the qualitative analysis, the key informant interviews that were done after the institute, where one fellow said, "They motivated us to work with other ethnic communities and build a bridge that worked with all the communities. It made us aware that we have the capacity to work in tobacco control, so it helped me professionally as well as at a personal level." At the community level, at the start of the institute, 72% of the fellows felt empowered to move their communities forward. But by the conclusion of the institute, every fellow felt empowered to do so. In addition to working in developing strategic action plans, there were actually projects that were created. Let me back up here. There were actually projects that were created in each of those communities with support of funding from Clearway, Minnesota. This was a quote where one fellow said, there was a wide variety of individuals all over, tribal members from all over the state and urban area. It elevated what we were doing. It taught us to work together better. On the policy and systems level, it was really important for fellows to be involved in learning about advocacy, community organizing, and policy. And one result of the Institute was that some of the fellows were invited to participate in a statewide committee focusing on the new Freedom to Breathe Act. And this fellow said, in my day job, I've used my experience in LAMP, and he worked in the mainstream, to have priority populations included in the implementation of our new statewide law, participating in a real and meaningful way. So before the LAMP Institute existed, there was no involvement of priority populations in many of these statewide and local communities. And the final level was the cross-cultural level, that fellows consistently recognized the importance of working cross-culturally, and that self-reported skill levels increased over the course of the Institute. And this is a chart showing the increase both in terms of being able to feel skilled in implementing cross-cultural work as well as working cross-culturally. And I do want to recognize that many people came into the Institute feeling that they were competent in their own community, whether it was the Latino community or the Asian community. But after the 18 months of the Institute, they also recognized not only did they need to kind of broaden their visions of what the communities meant and being able to collaborate with other priority populations, they recognized that they were not as competent as they felt in their own community because their communities were so diverse. So I think there was some very, very strong realizations of this work. And one LAMP fellow said, I will no longer work with my community only, but also work with peers from other ethnic groups. This is something beautiful I learned from LAMP. It was important to understand that we were all there to work with our communities and to realize we were after the same goals. I think I also forgot to mention that in Minnesota, priority populations make up only about 10% of the population, so it's very isolated in that state. Other results that resulted from LAMP included multiple presentations and sessions describing this institute, the dissemination of our evaluation findings, being able to follow up with the fellows, and the LAMP Institute, too, is going to be starting in 2009. Other states have also learned about this program, and we are going to be working with Oklahoma to do a cross-cultural leadership training as well. In conclusion, I just want to say that leadership trainings provide an effective and unique capacity-building opportunity for diverse priority populations. The LAMP evaluation has showed anticipated and unanticipated successes at four levels. That cross-cultural work and leadership development is challenging. It's very challenging the more diverse the group is. And that leadership trainings can help launch tobacco control mobilizations for priority populations, but it still requires a fair amount of resources and a comprehensive approach to doing tobacco control. I just want to end with this poster that I started with. And this poster was actually created in collaboration with the LAMP fellows working with the local artists to design not only the history of tobacco for priority populations, but the vision of what we could do as a movement and as a force, the sun and the waves representing that movement. So thank you very much.
Process for that youth that were interested did it. immigrant Latino population, again, it was a public charter school that was, it didn't charge tuition, but it was chartered nonetheless. And it was actually an art Spanish-speaking school that targeted immigrant Latino youth. So I recruited from there to do this particular project. Schools, churches, do you want to speak to how you recruited or?
What was an after school or a neighborhood teen resource organization in Baltimore, North Carolina? It was basically the reference affiliation with the General Baptist State Convention and sort of the recognition that the Center for Health and Healing, which was sort of a 503C that worked with the churches, had on hand all these organizations. So it was really through that 503C that worked with the churches.
I think it is really important that if you have a relationship with an organization, you're going to clearly do better in recruiting the youth. You know, the community-based approach is very popular now, but it stems out of relationship, and if you're going to do good work that's lasting, that does translate into policy, it takes time, it takes a lot of energy, it takes commitment. These processes aren't one-time photographs, but, you know, the show process, many of these things take weeks and building the relationships you have with organizations.
And I'm just going to piggyback on what Brian said. Go into it knowing that it's a labor intensive process and that you want to commit to those folks you're working with so they know what the fine line is. Something is worth in being involved with an organization doesn't recognize the labor involved and not committed to it. If they're not committed to it, it can be difficult to see through.
With the migrants?
The library?
Libraries. Oh, okay. We've considered lots of different things. And actually, we have talked about that. Actually, based on some work that the Alzheimer's Association has done in Indiana, they've done some very interesting work in libraries there. And actually, I think that a couple of the sites that we have done, I'm going to just ask Elaine, do you remember there were a couple of sites that actually have done work at the libraries? Do you remember those?
I think they're trying to do it in Chicago.
In Chicago. We have one of the sites where we've been working is in Chicago. And, you know, what we find is that sometimes different people obviously are thinking of different places. And some of it is really just the lack of resources and where to, you know, where are the first partnerships that kind of open the door. But libraries is definitely a place we have thought about. We just haven't gotten there yet. But definitely.
You may want to contact the regional medical library there and see who in your area might be doing some of that outreach. It could be a partner.
Right. Yeah. That's a great idea. Thank you very much. I think this lady is
going to do it. For Dr. Amir, you mentioned the Diabetes Education Empowerment Program.
Yes.
And I have a possible conflict of interest in asking this question because I belong to an organization that's disseminating it. But you mentioned that it's evidence-based?
Yes, it's evidence-based because there is literature showing different applications of the program, showing the effectiveness. It is not based on a randomized control trial.
Right, yeah.
I just want to say that. But there is literature showing the evidence of the effectiveness.
Right, but I mean, I just was curious because your discussion of you defined evidence based is based on randomized control trials. We actually don't have that.
Yeah, well, evidence, sure. But also, Sam would define evidence based more than anything showing the literature indicating the effectiveness to different sites.
Yeah, I mean, the situation points out the difficulty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not black and white. Yeah. I mean, it depends who you ask. They're going to give a different definition.
Absolutely. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, but we can tell you're seeing it on the network, but actually, like,
Oh, was it?
I'm sorry.
No, wait a minute.